It is enormous. You wrap your mind around every corner, press your thoughts into every edge. Your mind probes the swamp around the ship. You begin to lift. It rises and rises. You feel its weight, its enormity. It is 10 of you, 20, 50. You strain against it. Don't disappoint Yoda, you think. Your concentration is beginning to waver. You are straining. Oh, the ship starts to sink. Don't disappoint him. Ugh. It sinks entirely. I can't, you say, bowing your head. You are exhausted. It's too big. Yoda peers up at you.
Size matters not. Look at me. Judge me by my size, do you?
You shake your head.
Be not the older sons. Judge me not as a toad, nor a cat, nor a king, nor a man. I am both. I am all.
Suddenly, Yoda pinches you.
Ow!
This flesh deceives you. Yes, today you look like a man, and the ship looks like a ship. But you are not, and it is not. Shapes of the Force you are, one and the same. Reach out with your feelings, you must. Part of all things you are. Particles we are. Waves, all one.
He holds you in his gaze.
The candle's light, you see. The candle I hide with my hand. The candle I reveal. Different light? No. One light, separated by my hand.
He turns to the swamp.
So with you and the ship. One you are, just separated.
Your shoulders go limp. You are so confused, so tired. I don't know, you say. I think you're describing the impossible. Yoda shakes his head. He closes his eyes and reaches out a small, withered hand. Birds are singing in the ancient trees. The forest is thick and still. Calmly, with a face relaxed and at peace, little Yoda raises his hand. The X-Wing begins to rise. Rise! Rise up out of the swamp! 10 metric tons of steel and circuits hover over the surface of the water and then travel slowly, steadily to the shore. Yoda, all 13 kilograms of him, lowers his hand and the fighter comes to rest on the mossy, root-strewn bank. You stammer. I don't believe it. Yoda nods.
That is why you fail.
Lesson Zai. Do not stand on your hands and lift rocks. Don't worry, young one. I don't expect you to stand on your hands and move stones around, or to lift a spaceship with your mind. I mean, that'd be cool if you can do it. Go for it. But I don't expect you to. Instead, try this first. Meditate for 10 seconds. Then stand on one foot or put a book on your head. Count to 10. Okay? Now, while still balancing, say your telephone number backward. Can you do that? If so, keep balancing, but now spell your first name backward. Now, if you're somewhere you can, stand on one foot and balance a book on your head, and then spell your full name backward. Try not to get frustrated. Breathe. Use instant meditation to stay calm. If this is hard, that's okay. Just keep doing it. Not trying to do it, mind you. Just do it again and again and again until it isn't so hard. Until you can balance on one foot and keep a book on your head and spell your full name backward with a smile. And then you might be ready to move rocks and spaceships with your mind. Maybe. Chapter 17. Your eyes are closed. The breath whistles in and out of you, like water running through a thin pipe. The corners of your mouth edge up. It is pleasant to be at peace. The sounds and smells of Dagobah are exploding. A bird with a raspy, echoing caw announces that the tree 20 paces forward and 40 paces to your left is his tree. And don't you forget it. You can't see the bird or the tree, of course, because your eyes are closed. But you can hear him and sense him. And you try to tell him, "Fine, it's your tree. Enjoy." It rained last night, and the smell of the ground is rich with all the plants and worms and millipedes that love it when the earth is soggy. They are churning the loam over and over in their little underground farms. You can sense each one.
"Good,"
Yoda says.
"Good. Feel. Sense. Smell. Hear. Your eyes closed, you must keep. Test you now, I will. Calm, you must stay. Still, you must be. Holding something I am. Sense it, and tell me."
You breathe out through your nose, pouring out your silvery, fluid breath. You draw it in again. His hand is outstretched. Something sits on his hand. You can hear its rapid heartbeat. So it is alive and small. Last time it was a mouse, so maybe this time... No, don't think it through. Just sense it. The creature is lying flat. Its belly...
"Luke,"
Yoda rasps. You smile. He's trying to distract you.
"Open your eyes, you must."
You shake your head and retain your focus on Yoda's outstretched hand. Where is his outstretched hand? Has he moved it? Your smile fades. You are concentrating.
"Luke!"
You are jerked back and forth. Yoda has grabbed your shirt. He is shaking you. You laugh quietly. "Oh no, Master. You told me to keep my eyes closed. Nice try, though. You're holding a small animal in your hand. I'm going to sense what it is."
"Sense what is coming out of the jungle, you should."
Your smile disappears again, but still your eyes are closed. You throw your attention to the woods. A distant boom, accompanied by the sounds of branches snapping and brush being crushed again and again.
"Keep your eyes closed if you like,"
Yoda croaks.
"Running I am."
Your eyelids pop open. Your mouth falls agape. Coming through the trees directly for you is an enormous elephoth. Its hide is green and thick as armor. Its two thick tusks jut straight out from its mouth, like the blasters on a snowwalker. They are greenish and covered with moss and vines, like fallen trees. It has two trunks protruding from its face, and they writhe like angry snakes. The elephoth stands as tall as a small tree and weighs probably as much as your X-wing. Its legs are thick and round as hornbeam trunks. Its small red eyes gaze around madly. You look over your shoulder. Yoda is hopping over fallen tree trunks and waddling away from you as fast as he can. He is making pretty good time. You look back at the elephoth, and then you remember R2. He's doing some maintenance on his memory core. You spin around. Lights are flashing on his body, but his audio and visual processors must be temporarily offline because he hasn't started screaming and cursing at you yet. If he had seen the elephoth, he would have invented new curse words by now. You spin back toward the rampaging beast. It tramples the earth and is twice as close to you as it was before. Could you outrun it? Maybe, but not if you had to carry R2 with you. So you reach for your lightsaber. You ignite it. The blue light catches the Elephoth's small red eyes. It rears back, like a tree uprooting itself, and blasts a double cry, one from each trunk, in wrenching harmony. The jungle echoes. You breathe. You straighten your spine. You smile. You hear, you feel, you sense. You raise your pulsating blade. And then you hear another blast, also in the distinctive harmony of Elephoth trunks. But this one is shriller and far away. The cry enrages the Elephoth before you. It rears up again and then comes crashing down. R2 has woken up. Great. You try to focus on the Elephoth again, and not the unrepeatable things R2 is emitting from his speakers. The Elephoth is coming for you. You grip your lightsaber. It is 10 meters away. 8, 6, 4. Almost close enough for your blade. 2 meters away. You bolt to the right, waving your lightsaber above your head. The enraged Elephoth follows. You bound over a fallen tree trunk, plant your foot on a flat stone, leap across a mucky patch of thick moss, and begin to run. Still, you wave your lightsaber above your head. You don't have to look back. You can feel the Elephoth following you. And hear it. It's pretty loud. Ahead, there is a tangle of brambles. You slash it with your blade and run directly through it. The Elephoth roars its two tones. Somewhere ahead of you, the roar is answered. The crash of the great beast's footsteps are falling ever so slightly behind. 4 meters, 6 meters, 8. You slow your pace. 8 meters, 6. Okay, that's close enough. A ravine is ahead of you. You can see it. Thick with ferns and vines, and half-rotted trees still standing somehow. You dance across a fallen log, sensing the good wood without having to hesitate even for a moment. As soon as you jump off it, the Elephoth steps on it, sending it splintering into the air. You jerk your head to the left as a chunk of sharp wood hurtles past your ear. From behind, you felt it before it happened. You try not to smile. You arrive at the edge of the ravine. Vines hang like a quiver of arrows. One of them is good and strong and ready to bear your weight. You ignore it. You turn off your lightsaber, sheath it, and then slide down the side of the ravine. The Elephoth slows. It doesn't like steep slopes. You had not reckoned on that. You break your fall with your feet, slowing the slide down the slope. You reach for your lightsaber. You ignite your blade and wave it above your head. The response is the frantic two-tone call of an Elephoth coming from the bottom of the ravine. Above you, the call is answered. And then there is thunder. The great beast with the tree trunk tusks is charging down the slope behind you. 12 meters, 6, 2. You plant your feet and hurl yourself away from the ravine wall. Hurtling across the space of the ravine, arms flailing, legs kicking, hair flying, before you crash into the opposite wall, a good 10 meters away. You did not know you could jump 10 meters. As it turns out, you can. Your cheek hits the twiggy, root-woven earth. It explodes around you. You grip the soil and turn around. The Elephoth has stumbled to the bottom of the ravine. Its great tusks are covered with half the forest that you ran through to escape it. But it is calmed, for beside it is a much smaller Elephoth. That smaller Elephoth is rubbing its great domed head against his mother's flank, and she is exploring his face with her two huge trunks. You smile, pull yourself to your feet, and climb up the side of the ravine. At the top of the slope, Yoda is sitting on a stump. He is watching the two Elephoths. You look at him expectantly. He says,
"Next time I tell you to open your eyes, listen, you mite."
Then he crawls down from the stump and hobbles off toward home. He is laughing quietly. Lesson Omicron. Keeping track of everything isn't easy. You're going to need an assistant for this one. I want you to stand on one foot or to balance a book on your head. Breathe. Meditate for 10 seconds. Now, while you're balancing, your assistant is going to read the following riddle to you. You should not read the riddle before this begins. The whole point is for you to focus, relax, and think clearly, all while standing on one foot or balancing a book on your head. Okay, get in position. Meditate. Hello, assistant. This is the riddle. Read it aloud. A city bus is on its route. At its first stop, it picks up 10 passengers. At its second stop, the big white bus winds to a stop, opens its doors, lets off 2 passengers, and picks up 4 more. At the third stop, its brakes screech. It lets off 2 more passengers and picks up 6. At its fourth stop, it hisses as it comes to rest. The doors jerk open. No one gets off, and 4 people get on. At its fifth stop, with the sun glinting off its windshield, 5 people get on and 6 people get off. Okay, got all that? What color was the bus? Don't know? You should keep balancing. Your assistant should read the riddle again. Did it? Okay. This time the question is, how many people got off the bus at the fourth stop? Don't know? Last chance. Read it one more time. Now, how many people are on the bus after the fifth stop? I know this test seems cruel. So many things to keep track of. But when you're being chased by a raging Elephoth, or worse, fighting a Sith Lord, you've got to keep track of many things at once. And stay peaceful, sensitive, and patient through it all. I warned you, being a Jedi ain't easy. Chapter 18.
Good. Good.
Yoda whispers.
The Force you should feel. Flowing in you and out of you, like breath. Calm, yes. Through the Force, things you will see. Other places. The future. The past. Old friends long gone.
Your legs are crossed, your eyes closed. You are outside his small house. The air is hot and wet. You are breathing, listening to Yoda and breathing.
But beware these visions you must. Control the future you cannot. It shifts. We can try to change it, but we are small. And sometimes we push one way, and the future another way it goes.
The jungle feels silent. It doesn't sound silent. It feels silent.
Never understood this, did Vader?
Your eyes fly open.
Calm,
says Yoda.
Breathe, you must, and listen.
You close your eyes again.
Vader saw the future, but tried to control it, he did. Anger, he felt, and fear led him to the dark side. Quick way, easy way, but not good way.
Yoda chuckles. You don't know why. You open your eyes and glance at his gnarled, withered body. His smile is as serene as the double sunset of Tatooine.
Story heard I once, he says. From my master. True or not, I do not know. But good story. Listen, you will.
Yoda closes his eyes, inhales slowly, and begins.
There was once a Jedi named Kung Fu. wise was Kung Fu, and strong. But at this time, none was wiser or stronger than the great Jedi, Master Chuang. One day, heard did Kung Fu that Master Chuang's apprentice had died. So Master Kung Fu sent a messenger to Chuang, his condolences to give. But when arrived, the messenger did, found he the great Jedi laughing with his friends he was, playing music, singing, joking. There, the body of Chuang's apprentice lay, and laugh Chuang did. Upset the messenger was. "Is this," he asked, "how behaves a great Jedi when his apprentice dies?" To the messenger, the great Jedi replied, "Beat my head, should I? Tear my clothes, should I? Weep and wail in the street, should I?" Moved the Force has. "It was in the form of my apprentice. Now different my apprentice looks. Still, quiet. Soon, part of the ground will he be. Should I be angry? Is my apprentice less pleased, being a different part of the Force? Being trees growing, or the sea dancing and roaring in the wind? If he is pleased, why should I cry? And if I should change," the great Jedi went on, "if my back should hunch, if my hair should fall out, if my skin should sag like a sack, or worse, if my elbow turns into a rooster, and my knee a cat, cry should I then? No, I shall wonder at the miraculous changes the Force has wrought. Choose, I do not, what happens to me or to my apprentice. So cry, I do not. Bitter to sing it is." Returned did the messenger to Master Kung Fu. When related had the messenger what the great Jedi had said, Kung Fu closed his eyes. "Of course," he said, smiling and nodding. "Much to learn, have I."
Yoda stopped speaking. In that moment, something comes into your head. A vision. An awful vision. Your eyes fly open. Yoda is staring at you curiously. "Han," you cry. "Leia!" Yoda's face falls. "I see them." And you do. They are in pain. They are being tortured. Leia is screaming, her eyes bulging from her head. Han is straining, his back arched, his neck on the verge of snapping.
"The future, you see,"
Yoda murmurs.
"A future."
"I've got to help them," you cry. Yoda shakes his head.
"Hear me, you do not."
"I've got to go to them. I've got to save them." Yoda pauses.
"Decide you must how to serve them best. If you leave now, help them you could. But likely, you would destroy all that they have worked for. All for which they have fought and suffered. The cause, the rebellion, their battle against the Emperor. All would be lost. But saved, could they be?"
You stare at the tiny Jedi Master. Your eyes are wild. The silence dies in the jungle, replaced by a riot of sound. Lesson Pi. Tough choices. When I gave you the multiple choice test a few lessons ago, I said that Jedi don't act hypothetically. I told you that you couldn't choose between sitting with your friend or helping the new kid or sitting with the lonely girl. You had to do them all, which was true. But there are times, rare times, when you cannot do everything, when you have to choose between two bad options. Bad options like, one, letting your friends suffer and perhaps die, and two, saving them, but not being skilled enough to face Vader and not strong enough to resist the dark side, which would result in dooming the galaxy to slavery for the next few hundred years. That's a tough choice. but there are more mundane examples of the same conundrum. For example, you are going on vacation with your best friend. You're going somewhere awesome, like an amusement park or the mountains. It is going to be the best trip of your life and of your best friend's life. But you are also trying to change schools, to go somewhere with better academics and more interesting teachers. And the entrance exam has just been scheduled for during your trip. What do you do? Do you let your friend down and take the exam? Or do you give up on your dream of this new school and go on vacation with your pal? There is no right answer. But the choices you make will shape you. And they may shape history, too. Chapter 19. It is night. The X-Wing's lights glow faintly against the gloom of the swamp. R2-D2 checks the readings on various panels. He is whirring like a silverfinch. He has no love for Dagobah. You are loading your belongings into the cargo hold. Yoda's wrinkled face looks pained.
Luke, please, complete your training, you must.
You shake your head. The vision refuses to leave you. Your best friends, in terrible pain, weeping, screaming.
You must not go,
Yoda insists. The deep shadows of night envelop his small form. They'll die if I don't. Suddenly, another voice answers you. Rich and kind and understanding. Ben's voice.
You don't know that, Luke.
You turn and see him. He is standing beside Yoda. He shimmers. Ben! You cry. Aren't you...
Obi-Wan Kenobi smiles. I am still a part of the Force. You have, through your training, learned to see me.
You stare, drinking in the sight of your first master, your friend.
Please, Luke. Please, listen to Yoda.
Your shoulders hunch. He doesn't understand. He's just like Yoda. I can help them. I can feel the Force.
But you cannot control it. More importantly, you cannot control your feelings.
Ben's eyes are anxious. You can see that, even through their otherworldly shimmer. He goes on.
This is a dangerous time for you. You will be tempted by the dark side.
Yes,
Yoda agrees.
Listen to Obi-Wan. Remember your failure at the cave.
But I've learned so much since then. Ben's voice is rasping and low.
Luke, it is you the Emperor wants. That's why he makes your friend suffer.
You stop. You think about that. The Emperor wants you? A strange mixture of fear and something else is shifting, taking shape in your heart. Yoda and Obi-Wan watch you.
Luke, I don't want to lose you the way I lost Vader.
You look into his old, sad eyes. You feel that something in your heart start to fade. To be replaced by love. For the old man who trained you and gave his life for you. You look to Yoda. Yoda, for whom there is no distinction between a mouse and you and a spaceship. Who has devoted his life to training Jedi so that they may help others. Yoda, who had so much patience when you had none. You won't lose me, you say to them. I promise.
Stopped, they must be,
Yoda says.
On this all depends. If you choose the quick and easy path, as Vader did, you will fall under his control. And an agent of evil you will become.
If you choose to face Vader, Ben says, you must do it alone. I cannot help you.
You nod. I understand. R2, fire up the converters. The little droid whistles happily.
Luke,
Ben says desperately.
Don't give in to pride, fear, hatred. They lead to the dark side.
You climb onto the wing of your fighter, and then put a leg into the cockpit.
Strong is Vader,
Yoda intones.
Mind what you have learned. Help you it can.
I will. You slide into the pilot's seat. And I'll return to finish my training. I promise. But already you're thinking of something else. Of Han and Leia. Of the Emperor. Of Vader. You flip a switch. The cockpit hatch begins to close. Outside the ship, Yoda says quietly to Ben,
Told you I did. Now, matters are worse.
That boy is our last hope, Ben replies.
As your ship lifts into the sky, Yoda follows it with his gaze.
No,
he says at last.
There is another.
Strange Planets, Part 2, Chapter 20. The Millennium Falcon screams out of the atmosphere of Hoth, heading straight for a Star Destroyer. This is less like a mouse running at a tiger, and more like a lame rabbit with one bad eye running at a tiger. Leia, crouched over Han Solo's shoulder, mutters, Han? He ignores her.
Chewie, prepare to make the jump to light speed.
C-3PO, who has been trying to get Han's attention since the hangar in the Rebel base, tries again.
But, sir!
Two laser blasts erupt from the destroyer and whiz past the Falcon's hull. Four small Imperial fighters, TIEs, detach from a nearby formation and head directly for Solo's ship. The Tiger has buddies. Hardly seems fair.
They're coming!
Leia murmurs. Han just grins.
Yeah? Watch this!
He throws the lightspeed thruster down and turns to watch the stars go blazing by as the ship jumps into hyperspace. But the stars do not go blazing by. They hang there, limp and static. Watch what? Han throws the thruster again. Nothing. Very quietly, he says,
I think we're in trouble.
If I may say so, I noticed earlier that the hyperdrive motivator has been damaged. It's impossible to go to light speed.
We're in trouble,
Han shouts. Explosions rock the ship as the four TIE fighters close in. Han grabs the steering column, turns the Falcon sharply, and guns it. But the TIE fighters are hard on their backs. Behind the fighters, the Imperial Star Destroyer lumbers after them all, cannons blazing. Han jumps from the captain's seat.
Take it!
He shouts at Leia.
What?
He ignores her and runs to the mechanical port where Chewbacca is already yanking at wires and crying in confusion. Which sounds like... Leia watches the steering column veer left.
Hey!
Han calls. So the princess slides into the seat. She pushes hard left, exaggerating the turn.
Hey!
Han cries as he crashes into Chewbacca, and a cascade of sparks rain down on his scruffy head. The TIE fighters bank and follow Leia's course, their lasers exploding all around the pirate ship. Leia dips. Han's head hits the ceiling.
Hey!
The fighters follow. Leia pulls up. Han is thrown to the ground.
Hey!
Leia smiles. The Falcon rises and rises and rises and then jolts violently.
That wasn't a laser.
Han barks.
We hit something.
He mutters about women pilots and sprints back to the cockpit.
What are you doing, Prince?
He stops mid-sentence. He sees what she sees. Asteroid field, Leia announces grimly. Indeed. Stretching out before them as far as anyone can see are a million space rocks. Some large, some small, some the size of tiny moons. A good two-thirds of them are large enough to destroy a spaceship like the Falcon on impact.
Oh boy,
Han mutters. He slides into the pilot's seat, relieving Leia of her duties, which she performed more than admirably, it should be said, for the TIE fighters are now some distance behind, and stares at the death trap that stretches out before them. The rocks hang there, deadly and silent. The TIE fighters are closing in. Han pushes forward on the steering column.
Wait,
Leia says.
You're not going into the asteroid field.
Han grins.
They'd be crazy to follow us.
Chewie, appearing in the doorway of the cockpit, sees his captain's course and howls. Leia puts her head near Han's and whispers furiously,
You don't have to do this to impress me.
Sir!
C-3PO chirrups frantically.
The odds of successfully navigating an asteroid field are approximately 3,720 to 1!
As if to demonstrate the droid's point, the first of the pursuing TIE fighters meets an asteroid head-on. It explodes. Han grits his teeth.
Never tell me the odds!
Asteroids twirl and dance around them like some chaotic cosmic ballet. Someone who appreciates the beauty of the Force might enjoy watching the passing, spinning, whirling space boulders that hurtle past the Falcon. Han, Leia, Chewie, and C-3PO, on the other hand, are trying not to soil their pants. Except that Chewie and C-3PO don't wear pants. Behind them, a second fighter collides with an asteroid, becoming a fiery, ephemeral grave.
Well, Princess,
Han sighs.
You said you wanted to be around when I made a mistake. This could be it.
I take it back,
cries Leia. A small asteroid bounces off their hull with a sickening crunch.
I take it back!
Beneath them, one of the enormous asteroids floats by, silent and inexorable as death. Han looks down at it.
I'm gonna take us closer to one of the big ones.
Closer?
Closer?
Leia and C-3PO and Chewie all cry at once. Though Chewie's closer actually sounds like... The Millennium Falcon dives, and the TIE fighters follow. Soon, they are zipping over the craterous surface of the moon-sized asteroid. The TIE fighters in pursuit. The Falcon roars over a star-blue cliff edge and then dives into a canyon. The fighters follow, close behind, firing off an occasional pot shot as they try to follow Han's reckless course.
Oh, this is suicide!
And then, it's over. The canyon, that is. Nothing but a blue stone wall.
Hold on!
Han shouts far too late. The Falcon rises straight up. The passengers go flying. The ship's belly is scraping the asteroid's blue stone. Han is wrestling with the controls, trying to pull up higher, higher into the black sky above. Below them, the two TIE fighters slam into the wall and explode. C-3PO and Leia pull themselves to their feet and then grip the walls again. The Falcon is now doing a slow flip. They both slide up the walls until they are plastered against the ceiling and then slide down to the floor again. Leia, on her knees, says,
I love it when you drive.
There,
Han says.
That looks pretty good.
What looks good?
C-3PO, sitting on the floor, says,
I have not registered a single good thing about this situation, sir. Of all the situations I have been in, which number some 8,300,000,
says Chewbacca, which means, roughly translated, shut up. The Falcon is heading back toward the asteroid now. On the surface, there is a small black cave. Han is heading straight for it. Leia says,
No.
Han says,
Yep.
I hope you know what you're doing, she mutters.
Yeah.
Han replies.
Me too.
A moment later, the Millennium Falcon disappears into the cave on the face of the asteroid.
Lesson Row, Navigating an Asteroid Field. This next test needs to be done in a room that belongs to you, because you need to get that room messy. Put objects all over the floor. Toys, books, pillows, whatever. If you're outside, maybe you can use stones, twigs, and book bags. Now, stand on one leg, breathe, feel your breath pass from your nose, down your throat, into your stomach, down your rooted leg and into the ground. When you feel fully rooted, start hopping. Hop from one end of the room to the other without touching anything, including the strewn objects. Whether you're in an asteroid field or the jungle on Dagobah, as a Jedi, you must feel what is around you, must take it into your mind and respond to it as if it were a part of your very body. According to Yoda, after all, it is. If this test is easy, try it with your eyes closed. Chapter 21. In the asteroid, it is as dark as the insides of a tauntaun. It doesn't smell quite as bad, though. A tunnel, just large enough for the Falcon, winds into the core of the blue space dome. Han follows it, slowly. "What are we doing here?" Leia whispers. Chewie says, which means the same thing.
"We need a safe place for repairs. Can't face those Star Destroyers again with no hyperdrive motivator."
The ship wends deeper and deeper into the asteroid. It is like entering a new world. A new world where there is no light, no sound, no sensations at all. C-3PO informs the crew that
"There are no official records of exploration of the center of asteroids. That means it might be quite dangerous."
Everyone finds this commentary extremely insightful. Han brings the ship to a bumpy landing in the blackness of the cave.
"Hey, Chewie,"
he says, climbing out of the pilot's seat.
"Come help."
The pirate starship sits for hours in darkness as Han and Chewbacca touch wires together and screw and unscrew bolts they don't really recognize. C-3PO tries to supervise them, regularly giving unhelpful advice. Leia stays in the cockpit, watching the readings on the dials. After a while, Han joins her there. C-3PO follows him, nattering away.
"I wonder, sir, if attaching the cobalt wire to crimson wire was really such a good idea. Not that I'm questioning your authority, sir. Your expertise, perhaps. But never your authority."
"Okay,"
says Han, ignoring the droid and addressing Leia.
"I'm gonna shut down the main..."
Suddenly, the ship lurches violently to the right. The three inhabitants of the cockpit are thrown against blinking control panels. The Falcon settles. They stand, not moving, barely breathing.
"Sir, it is quite possible that this asteroid is not entirely stable."
"Not entirely stable?"
Han replies.
"I'm glad you're here to tell us these things. Not entirely stable. Professor, why don't you go help Chewie with the hyperdrive? See if he appreciates your analysis."
C-3PO totters out of the cockpit, muttering to himself about understanding over 6 million languages, but not quite having mastered the one called sarcasm. The ship lurches again, even more violently this time. Han is thrown into the control panel again, while Leia is thrown into Han's arms. The ship settles. He smiles at her.
"Let go," she snaps.
"Don't get excited, princess,"
he replies. He does not let go. She pushes him away.
"Being held by you, Captain, isn't quite enough to get me excited."
What follows is a flirtation that kind of looks like a fight. Or maybe it's a fight that kind of looks like flirtation. I've never really been very good at telling the difference. Anyway, it's irrelevant to your training, so I'm skipping it. Suffice it to say that Han and Leia end up kissing. If that sort of thing interests you, you can imagine it yourself. And then, C-3PO interrupts the kiss, announcing that Chewbacca has made a breakthrough with the hyperdrive motivator. Han comes very close to disabling the golden droid and affixing him to the exterior of the Falcon as a hood ornament. But he follows the droid to the mechanical bay to see what Chewie's done. Not 5 minutes later, Leia shouts from the cockpit. Han and Chewbacca come running. The princess is pointing into the darkness. Her face is as white as her royal tunic.
"There's something... something out there."
Just as she says it, an object lands somewhere on the Falcon. Han listens.
A sound rises out of the darkness. Regular, persistent, almost like something is gnawing on the ship. A panel of lights in the cockpit flickers and winks out.
I'm going out there,
Han says.
Are you serious?
We just got this bucket of bolts back together. I'm not going to let something tear it apart.
Or eat it,
Leia mutters. Han ducks from the cockpit.
Wait,
Leia shouts.
I'm coming with you,
says Chewbacca, which means me too. The scruffy space pirate, the princess, and the walking mop don oxygen masks to enable breathing in the nearly non-existent atmosphere of the asteroid. Han lowers the gangway, and he, Leia, and Chewbacca slowly make their way down it. Han is carrying a blaster. Chewbacca has his bowcaster, which is like a crossbow that uses magnets to fire energy bolts.
You should definitely ask for one of those for your next birthday. I know I'm going to.
As the small group steps from the steel gangway to the floor of the asteroid, Leia says,
It's damp out here, and warmer than I expected.
Han tries to gaze through the darkness, but he can't make out much. Somewhere in the distance is the sound of dripping water.
I have a bad feeling about this place,
whispers the princess.
I can't imagine why,
Han replies. Chewbacca barks and points to the ship's cockpit. A 2-meter-long shape can be seen gliding across the top of the Falcon, like a barracuda swimming through the dark waters of an ocean reef. Han turns on a heel and lets loose a laser blast. The creature screeches, beating leathery wings against the dark. Han shoots again. It falls to the cave floor. Han, followed by the others, hurries to its crumpled form. He kicks it with his boot, moving a large wing away from his huge, gnarled, bat-like face. Leia shudders. So does Chewie.
What I thought, says Han. Minox. Probably chewing on the power cables. Chewie, check the rest of the ship. Last thing we need in a fight with a Star Destroyer is...
Watch out!
Leia shouts. Swooping out of the darkness is a pack of them, their toothy mouths screeching, their flattened noses hissing, their horrible eyes wide.
Run!
Han cries, firing into the swarm of cold-blooded, leather-winged parasites. Chewie and Leia sprint for the Falcon's gangway. Han fires again, his shot going low and hitting the floor of the cave. Suddenly, the asteroid is sliding again, listing to the right. As the small crew of the Falcon tries to regain their footing, the Minox descend upon them, swarming, their claws and sucking mouths lunging at hair, clothes, skin. Han looks desperately around. With one arm, he covers his head. With the other, he levels his blaster at the ground by his feet, which is hard, he has suddenly realized, but not rock hard. He fires. The asteroid lurches again.
Time to go,
he cries. They all manage to crawl or stumble up the gangway, frantically swatting the Minox away with arms and elbows, blasters and a crossbow. Chewbacca turns and pulverizes one last Minox as the hatch begins to close. Once the hatch is secure, Han leads a mad dash for the cockpit.
We're getting out of here.
The Star Cruisers will be waiting for us,
Leia objects, running after him.
Is it really?
No time to discuss this in committee,
Han snaps.
Chewie, initiate the engines.
Leia growls at him.
I am not a committee.
As they come tumbling into the cockpit, C-3PO says,
Sir, I really think it's time for us to consider leaving.
You know, Goldenrod, I think this is the first time we've seen eye to eye. I'm so glad.
Oh, so am I, sir. So am I.
Han rolls his eyes, initiates the lifters, and the ship lurches off the rock floor of the cave. Han pushes on the accelerator, and the Falcon leans forward, picking up speed. He steers them through the winding tunnel, his fingers squeezing the steering column hard enough to leave indents. Chewbacca howls and points. They can see stars again, set against the black velvet of space.
C-3PO becomes even more agitated.
Look, sir, it's...
I see it!
Han barks. Stalactites and stalagmites, like jagged teeth, are closing in on them. Up ahead, the view of space is dwindling, the stars winking out behind stone.
The cave's collapsing!
Cries Leia.
This is no cave!
Han bellows. It's true. They are not stalactites and stalagmites. They are teeth. The cave is not a cave. It is a mouth. The tunnel was not a tunnel. It was a throat of something. Something large. As the massive mouth is just about to shut, the Falcon, no bigger than a single tooth, shoots out of the darkness and into the greater darkness of space. Behind it, a monstrous, worm-like creature, white and eyeless, and nearly the size of a Star Destroyer itself, erupts from the hole in the asteroid and tries to swallow the ship up. The Falcon screams ahead, and everyone inside screams too. But the ship is fast enough, just fast enough to outpace the space worm's snapping jaws. The worm, disappointed, slides back into the asteroid. The ship, meanwhile, slides into space. Inside, sweating and heaving, Han guides them toward the edge of the asteroid field, where the Star Destroyers are waiting. Lesson Sigma: Punching in the Dark. You're going to have someone toss soft objects at you again. You're going to block them away. But this time, your eyes are going to be closed. Face the person. Close your eyes and breathe. Listen to the room. Feel it. When you say go, the person is going to, very gently, toss these objects at your face and chest. You will try to block them away with your hands. Listen for the objects. Feel them. Do not guess. Feel. You will miss. You'll probably miss more than you hit. That's okay. Don't get frustrated. Remember, anger leads to the dark side. If you can stay calm during this activity, that is more valuable than batting away the objects. If you can do both, though, you're really on to something. Chapter 22. They stare at the enormous Imperial ships. Everyone's breathing through open mouths. Hearts are beating hard. Everyone except C-3PO, of course, who finds both respiration and circulation superfluous. Still, he's more scared than the rest of them combined.
Okay,
Han says.
Ready for light speed.
Any minute now, Leia mutters. Then out of the blackness of space, a laser blast rocks the Falcon. They've been spotted.
Hold on,
Han bellows.
One, two.
Leia looks in trepidation as another laser bolt screams toward them.
Three.
The four space travelers look expectantly at the stars. Nothing. Again.
It's not fair,
Han whines. The blast rocks the ship, rattling the gears and bolts and cylinders. C-3PO is frantic.
Sir, the shields are at 40%. Another hit like that and we're done for.
Han looks at his meter readings.
Okay, Chewie, give me all power to the forward shields. I'm going in.
You're going to attack them? Leia shrieks. The Millennium Falcon dives at the nearest Star Destroyer. Bright green blasts light up the space around them.
Sir, the odds of surviving a direct attack on an Imperial Star Destroyer are...
Shut up, Leia shouts. But in case you want to know, the odds of the Falcon surviving an attack on an Imperial Star Destroyer are about the same as the odds of a lame half-blind bunny surviving an attack on a hungry tiger. Give or take. The ship dives at the destroyer, lasers blazing. It is one brave bunny. On the bridge of the Imperial Star Destroyer, Captain Nita, commander of the vessel, grins.
We have them now.
The Falcon hurtles through space, aiming directly, it seems, for the viewing deck of the bridge. Closer it comes. Closer.
Closer!
Fire!
He cries. But the red laser blast misses. The Falcon is coming too fast, too low. The captain's face goes white. The Falcon is 100 meters away. 80, 60, 40, 20! Duck! Screams the captain. He throws himself to the floor, as if that would do any good. His face is pressed against the cold, sheer steel, waiting for impact. Nothing. When he looks up at last, the sky is empty. Just a million crystalline stars.
Where are they?
Nita bellows. Behind him, his lieutenants check their readings frantically.
We can't find them, sir. They've just disappeared.
What? Nonsense. Where are they?
But they search the readings to no avail. The Falcon is gone. An hour later, brave Captain Nita boards a shuttle that takes him from his Star Destroyer to the flagship of the fleet. As he disembarks, his stomach twists into a knot. He listens to his own footsteps echo along the glossy floors of the Imperial ship. He's been a good captain, he tells himself. Everything will be fine. When he arrives at the bridge, he finds Darth Vader addressing a motley collection of space creatures. There is a Tadoshok, a Gand, and a Corellian cyborg, among others. You might not know what any of those look like, but trust me, they're weird. Just imagine some weird dude standing around listening to Vader. Oh yeah, and they're carrying guns. Lots of guns. They're bounty hunters, by the way. They specialize in tracking hard-to-find pilots and their ships. In one corner, standing apart, is a man in a battered, dirty spacesuit. His name is Boba Fett. He knows the Falcon from its days on Tatooine, and he knows the Empire is not the only one who wants it found, that there is money to be made twice on this ship. He also knows the man who captains it, and how he thinks. Darth Vader senses Captain Nita's presence. He stops speaking.
Lord Vader,
the captain says. He can feel his neck beginning to constrict. Calm yourself, he thinks. When the Dark Lord turns, his cape sweeps out behind him, like a storm cloud covering the sun.
What is it, Captain?
The captain represses a shudder.
We've lost them.
The grip on his throat is no less painful for being invisible. The air stops flowing to his lungs. Blood ceases circulating in his brain. His eyesight fades to white.
Apology accepted,
Vader murmurs, and turns back to the bounty hunters. Stormtroopers swoop in to dispose of Captain Nita's body. The Millennium Falcon perches on the back of former Captain Nita's Star Destroyer. Just behind its main radar tower, too close to be seen. They say, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. Han Solo is demonstrating the truth of that adage in the extreme. Well, Leia admits reluctantly, staring at the bristling gun turret that would be aimed directly at them, if only its operator knew where they were. That was a neat trick.
I don't know what you're talking about,
C-3PO complains.
Captain Solo, you have gone too far. No, Chewbacca, I will not be quiet. Surrender is a perfectly acceptable alternative in extreme circumstances. The Empire may be gracious
after you.
Leia reaches over and shuts off C-3PO's audio output speakers. He flails his arms in fury. Han smiles and leans back in his chair, his hands cradled behind his head. Now, the princess continues, how do we get off?
These cruisers like to dump their space junk before jumping into hyperspace. We'll wait for that and float away with the trash.
That suits this ship, Leia mutters.
Hey.
And then? Assuming your garbage camouflage holds up? Han leans forward.
Then, we've got to find a safe port around here to complete repairs. Any ideas?
Chewbacca brings up an electronic map on the ship's main control panel. The small crew pores over it. Han groans.
A NOAAD system. Nothing around here but mining colonies, and...
He pauses. He is suddenly interested.
And Lando?
The Lando system, Leia interjects. Never heard of it.
Lando's not a system, he's a man,
Han says, warming to the idea.
Lando Calrissian. He's a card player, gambler, scoundrel. You'd like him.
I don't like scoundrels.
You like me?
No, I don't.
Han ignores her. He's on Bespin. Runs a gas mining colony there. Won it in a card game. We go way back, Lando and me. Well, that was a long time ago, Chewie.
What was?
Nothing.
So you can trust him?
Trust him? No. But he's got no love for the Empire. I can tell you that much.
Chewbacca lets out a warning bark as he reads the ship's sensors. They all brace themselves. In a slow avalanche, a mountain of junk, broken machinery, damaged steel, effluent, garbage, floats out into space. The Falcon detaches from the surface of the destroyer and floats away with it. The small crew watches the great warship. They are barely breathing. The Imperial Star Destroyer fires up its engines and then, boom, takes off into hyperspace. Han smiles. Leia lays a hand on his shoulder.
You do have your moments, she says.
Not many, but you have them.
Han prides himself on keeping things pretty cool, but with Leia's hand on his shoulder and her compliment ringing in his ears, his cool heart beats just a little harder.
Once the Star Cruiser fleet has completely disappeared, the Falcon powers up its engines and leaves the field of space junk, charting a course for Lando's colony on Bespin. A few minutes later, a small ship, the Slave One, nestled among the space junk and filthy with the desert sands of a distant planet called Tatooine, powers up, wends its way through the detritus, and silently follows the Millennium Falcon.
The City in the Clouds. Chapter 23. Bespin is a shimmering pink planet, all gases and clouds, like soap suds. It lies in the fabric of space like a pink marble would lie on a black blanket. Beautiful, out of place. Floating in the lower atmosphere, crystalline and shimmering, like a child's top molded in platinum, is Cloud City, the center of the mining operations on the north side of the planet. A single silver tendril descends toward the gaseous surface of the world below. The Millennium Falcon banks, adjusting its course for the skybound town.
It's a gas mining community,
Han explains.
Lando's in charge of the whole thing. Hard to believe, since I've never known him to run anything larger than a card table. But he's been here for years.
Two laser bolts hit either side of the ship, sending it lurching right, then left. Chewie roars. Han looks at the scopes. Two small patrol ships have taken position just behind them. Through the Falcon's intercom come the words,
"You have not been granted permission to land."
Han replies,
"I know. I'm looking for Lando. Lando Calrissian."
"He has identified your vessel. You are to follow us. Do not deviate from your course."
The small crew of the Millennium Falcon look at one another.
"Touchy, aren't they?"
C-3PO chirrups. Leia is looking hard at Han.
"I thought you were friends with this guy."
"There's nothing to worry about,"
Han assures her through gritted teeth. Leia sighs.
"Who's worried?"
The landing pad is empty. Pink clouds float by, pushed by a wind that smells faintly sweet, like someone is cooking pancakes and drenching them with syrup. It's actually the smell of the predominant gas in Bespin's atmosphere, rethan. It isn't toxic to humans, at least not very. Han, Leia, C-3PO, and Chewbacca walked down the gangway of the Millennium Falcon, the motliest, least impressive crew of a pirate ship this side of the galaxy. They gazed around for some sort of welcoming party.
Hmm,
C-3PO huffs.
No one here to meet us. Quite rude.
Leia shakes her head.
I don't like this.
On the other hand, they did let us land.
Han tells them all not to worry, but his voice and face are anything but reassuring. And then, a door on the far side of the platform opens, and a dashing man steps through. A long cape dances behind him as he strides forward, and a pencil-thin mustache perches like an ornament just above his lips. A dozen security guards march behind him, followed finally by an officious-looking manservant with a bald head and an electronic command system fastened to his ears. The caped man looks furious.
See?
Han whispers to his gang.
My friend, Lando.
And then to Chewbacca, he adds,
Maybe go get the bowcaster.
The man's voice is rising as he approaches.
Why, you slimy, double-crossing, no-good swindler! You've got a lot of guts coming here, after the stunt you pulled!
He's coming at Han hard, and with increasing speed. Han sets his feet and curls his hands into fists. As Lando comes within reach, he throws a hard right at Han. The space pirate ducks, and then is pulled into an embrace? The landing party stares, confused. But Lando is laughing.
How you doing, you old pirate?
Lando, as dashing and handsome a man as you've ever met, pulls back and looks at Han. He shakes his head. He's still laughing.
You look like a mess.
And you look like a businessman,
Han shoots back. Lando laughs some more. The two of them turn and, arms around each other's shoulders, start for the doors. The manservant with the headset dismisses the guards, who troop in unison inside and out of sight.
Well, he seems friendly,
C-3PO announces, falling into line behind the old mates.
Yeah, Leia mutters. Charming.
As they pass through the fine, silvered sliding doors, Lando says,
So what are you doing here?
Repairs.
Han gestures back at the Falcon.
I thought you could help me out.
Lando looks alarmed.
What have you done to my ship?
Your ship?
Han stops, and the group following them pulls up short. He is gesturing at his chest with his thumb.
You lost her to me, fair and square.
Fair? You never played a hand of cards fair in your life.
Are you accusing me of cheating?
Are you denying it?
The two men glower at each other for a second. 3 seconds? 5? Leia glances at Chewbacca to see if he's got a blaster. And then, the two men break up laughing. Leia exhales and rolls her eyes. Men, as egotistical as roosters, and about as smart. The corridors of the mining colony are wide and shining. The floors are an expensive, marble-like stone, and frequent windows give out onto a breathtaking view of the lower atmosphere.
Well?
Han asks.
How's the mining business?
Lando sighs, the sigh of the fortunate.
Oh, you know, never making quite the profit you want. You got your supply problems, then your labor disputes, and once you take care of those, there's...
Han begins laughing again.
What's so funny?
Listen to you.
Han grins.
Since when were you a responsible businessman?
Lando shakes his head ruefully.
Yeah, I suppose I'm responsible these days. It's the price you pay for being successful.
Leia is watching him, listening. She notes a sudden something in his voice that she has not heard before. Maybe it's regret, she tells herself. The group walks on. C-3PO, tottering behind as usual, spies another protocol droid. A 3PO unit emerging from a side room.
Oh, hello,
he calls.
Ejuta,
replies the droid. C-3PO stops, stunned.
How rude.
Ejuta is, of course, Huttese. It is absolutely not appropriate to translate. Maybe when you're older. Then, From the room from which the rude 3PO unit just emerged, C-3PO hears the characteristic beeping of an R2.
That sounds just like... I wonder...
As Lando leads the way around a corner and into the next hallway, C-3PO follows the beeping sounds, thinking that maybe, just maybe, he might find his friend. He does not. Instead, his eyes get very bright. And then, he is shot, right in the chest, and he explodes! Lesson Tau. Prepare for the darkness. Scatter objects across the floor. Recruit someone to throw soft objects at you. Stand on one foot. Keep your eyes open. Breathe. Hop across the floor on one foot, avoiding the scattered stuff. Your assistant should gently throw the objects at you. Bat them away as you hop. Stay calm. This should be fun. Difficult things are fun when your mind is not disturbed by fear or anger or pride. Breathe. The darkness is coming. Chapter 24. Leia is pacing in a luxurious apartment. The windows look like paintings too monotonously beautiful to hang in a museum. The furniture is made to look expensive, but was probably mass-produced on some moon in the Bethany system. The carpet makes the place marvelously soundproof, eerily so. The doors slide open silently, and Han walks in.
Repairs are almost finished, he announces.